And now we will hear more of the audio from the Forum Against Police Violence and Impunity that took place from January 29th to the 31st. This weekend-long event housed many discussions and workshops dealing with various themes including migration, social and racial profiling, gender-based violence, political repression, and colonization. A panel discussion titled Never Again, Families Speak Out, featured the voices of families who have ended up confronting all sorts of barriers in their search for the truth about what happened to their family member who has been murdered by the police. As they continue to demand that justice be served, Bridget Tolley, who was heard on the earlier half of the coverage from the forum, is an Algonquin woman whose mother, Gladys Tolley, was fatally hit by a car driven by two Sûreté de Québec police officers. During the panel, she shared with us the details about how her mother's case was dealt with by the police.
They did not call the band police. Instead, they went to the hospital, got a doctor, pronounced her dead at the scene, and her body was sent directly to a funeral home. I feel that negligence on the part of the SQ officers led to my mother's death, and the resulting investigation did not follow accepted practices or procedures. For instance, police reports. They had the wrong addresses. There was three police forces involved. There was the SQ that hit my mother. There was the Kittagong ZB, band police who had jurisdiction over the highway. And there was the Montreal police that arrived 8 hours later. There was three police forces involved. They didn't have the address right. Times were all wrong. His brother made a report and said the first factor of my mom's death was negligence of a pedestrian, and the second factor was alcohol.
Bridget explained that it was the brother of the cop who had murdered her mother who wrote this report.
In the days, months, and years following my mom's death, the police who are supposed to be there to serve and protect were confrontational, refused to share information about the case with my family or communicate with us in English. They treated me as a troublemaker because I wanted the officers to be held responsible for my mother's death. This swift, secretive, self-serving actions had taken away what little faith I had in the police and justice system, leaving me with an ongoing mistrust of systems which have failed First Nation communities for generations. It is my belief that the actions of the police following my mother's death greatly breached her dignity and respect of that of our entire family. A public review of the conduct of the police officers who struck and killed my mom and of the investigation that followed is warranted in order to correct this miscarriage of justice and to restore my mother's spirit.
During a panel entitled The Gender of Police Violence, Jessica Yee, Executive Director of the Native Sexual Health Network, spoke about some of the circumstances that come as a result of the RCMP's failure to offer adequate supervision on Native reserves.
There are still communities, particularly in the north and rural and remote communities, where because the RCMP have sent one person as their detachment to supervise 8 reserves, that people have had to enact their own justice systems, where people do have to tie, you know, a guy up for beating on his partner or his spouse because the police are not going to get there for another day or 2 days or whatever it may be.
The forum offered 2 comprehensive workshops in both French and English aimed at informing people on how to assert their rights when dealing with the police. This workshop was facilitated by the Collective Opposed to Police Brutality and focused on understanding what your basic rights are when dealing with the cops.
The number one thing in all interactions with police is you can remember you have the right to, you should, for so many different reasons. remain silent. But sometimes it's hard, you know, like cops are going to ask you lots of questions, they're going to tell you lots of things, and you'll want to respond, you know, and even without thinking about it, some of your responses might incriminate you. They might just be helpful to the police in lots of reasons you can't understand. If you can, remain silent. Another thing with police is that, unfortunately, a lot of the situations we're in with police, you know, they're very agitated. Cops don't usually, you know, like, usually when you're dealing with cops, a lot of the time, anyhow, it's stressful. They can be provocative, you know, they can be trying to piss you off or trying to accuse you of something and you feel, like, very stressed out or, like, indignant. So one thing to try to do, which is hard sometimes, is to remain calm and sort of try to, like, diffuse the situation, sort of be like, I don't want any trouble, I'd really, like, just go home, etc. It's huge and, again, I think sort of obvious, but still really important to highlight is don't touch cops. Don't have any physical contact with them whatsoever. Touching a cop is a criminal offense. It's assault. Like, actually touching a cop, I'm not exaggerating, is a criminal offense. Assault. So, again, very hard. You know, sometimes when you're interacting with police, they may be coming up to you, they may be very close, they may be touching you. So it's really hard, but I mean, you just have to think about sort of the consequences and not just the legal consequences, also the fact that the cops are really stressed out. They may see that as a provocation. It's not that it would be your fault, but it may just, you know, like, start a really bad situation where there was, like, a physical altercation with the cop, and the cop has a taser, he has a baton, you know, like, so avoid that as much as possible, obviously. So I guess the last thing is, if you're just having an interaction with the cop and you're not under arrest and, you know, as soon as you feel like it's safe to leave, try to leave with other people, try to leave with friends if possible, tell the cop you're leaving, like, I'm leaving now, I'm going home, I'm leaving. I guess, and try to get away and try to sort of stay around other people. Like, it's not all the time the cops are, like, going to follow you and, you know, give you shit afterwards. They may just want to go do something else as well, but you never know. So just try to stay as safe as possible. Just lose yourself in the crowd or try to go somewhere with people. We ask you to sort of use your judgment and not take it as written in stone, because you really have to decide in the moment, like, what's best. Like, do I just stand still and say nothing? Or do I leave? Or a lot of the times when some of the advice we give you in this workshop is, like, assert your rights, you know, say, you don't have the right to search me. Say, you know, like, I don't have to identify myself. That's good. It's great. Like, people should do that. They should stand up for their rights. But it's also really important to remember that there's consequences and there's reactions that can come from those sorts of assertions. So just be very aware when you're talking to a cop, when you're saying, like, you don't have the right to this and that, that his reaction may be, oh, okay, this person knows what they're talking about. I guess, you know, I'll leave them alone. Or, please. so sorry. So the reaction may be, okay, this person, you know, like, they're not going to let me abuse my power, so I'll leave them alone. Or the reaction may be, this person's really asking for it, you know, like, they're really, like, questioning my authority, and I don't like that, and I'm going to find a way to get back at them. So I'm going to give them a ticket, I'm going to harass them, whatever.
The Asserting Our Rights When Dealing with Cops workshop specified the circumstances in which you are legally required to identify yourself to a police officer, and in turn emphasized when you do not have to identify yourself and have the right to keep your identity from a cop.
If you are asked for ID, like, one of the things you can say, if you're not sure, is just ask why. And then, you know, if you think it's not a valid reason, say, you know, do I have to? Or sort of be like, sorry, I'm in a hurry, no, whatever, but just sort of check out the cop and see what kind of mood he's in and decide, you know, what you're going to say to him exactly. There are certain situations where you do have to identify yourself to the police. When I say you do have to identify yourself, I mean you can obviously refuse to identify yourself. Some people do that just on principle. The situations when you are required to are under arrest. Under arrest, you're only required to give police your full name, your date of birth, and your current address. Second situation where you have to identify yourself to a police officer is when you are driving a car. So if you're in a car, you're a passenger, you're not required to identify yourself if the car is stopped by police. Really, you know, you can just say, I don't have to, I don't want to, or just even ask, sort of like, do I have to? Another situation where you have to identify yourself is actually specific to minors, which is in establishments like bars where there is like an age requirement, like you have to be 18. I think if you're suspected to be a minor, you have to identify yourself to prove your age, but it's, you know, there's all these gray areas with these things. Here's a really weird one, which is, I think, sort of used to target homeless people and youth, which is that at night in public spaces, which is more specifically in parks, you have to identify yourself. It's not really clear why, but you identify yourself to sort of like avoid getting charged with flânage, which is, I think, loitering. So it's really just a pretext, you know, to harass homeless people and youth who like hang out in these places after dark. But anyhow, the legal definition of night is like between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. So if between that time period you're in like a park and a cop asks you for ID, it's not like too clear, like you may, I think, have to identify yourself. But mostly they do it when people are, you know, drinking or whatever, loitering. So the last one, and this is fairly recent, is people who have the OPIS privilege card for the metro, which is the photo ID card that you have if you're over 65 or a full-time student or under a certain age, I think. You have to identify yourself to police in the metro to prove that you have the right to use a reduced rate card. However, they can't ask you for other ID. They can ask you to see your photo ID metro card. That's all they're supposed to ask you for. And that's all you really have to give. Cops really like to know who you are. They really like to be able to keep an eye on you, say, like, I know that guy, I stopped him for whatever, I know his name. When they're getting your identification, they usually try to get more information about you as well. They'll ask you for your phone number, they'll ask you where you work, etc. This is all information that you don't have to give to the police. It's information they'd like to have because it just makes it easier for them to sort of always be in control, feel like they can harass you. If they see you on the street, they'll call your name, or they'll say, I know where you work, I'll come and see you. So yeah, I guess the point of sort of resisting identifying yourself to the police would be that's your right to have your identity and to not just like give all your information to this cop because he feels like having it. You know, it's not his right, and you can decide whether or not you want to do it.
The workshop offered tips on how to gather the important information that will help you when filing a complaint against a police officer, or to report an abuse of power, an illegal search, or any form of police brutality exercised by a cop, which you may have been victim to or a witness.
The first thing you should do is, if you have injuries, if you have witnesses, you need to record your injuries, so take photos of them, have people who you know, can be like, well, I was there and I saw it, or I saw him before and then I saw him after, and this is how he looked before and this is how he looked after. Try to get a doctor's note. It's hard. You don't want to stay all night in the emergency necessarily, but it can be really helpful if you're going to do a complaint. Yeah, try to get as much evidence as you can. Try to, like, recall where you were, what time it was, who the cops were, or what the cops looked like, and, like, maybe what station they were from, if you happen to notice. It's on their car, usually. So all that information can sort of help you afterwards to file a complaint, or even just to, like, have a good recollection of what happened for whatever kind of purposes you want to use it for afterwards, because... Yeah, it just, as with everything, it sort of fades with time, so little details that may not seem important, like after a couple weeks, you may not be able to recall.
Jaggi Singh, one of the organizers of the Forum Against Police Violence and Impunity, spoke in a workshop that focused on the history of police repression against social movements in Montreal.
People talk about needing a permit to protest. You don't need a permit to protest. The Charter of Rights is your permit to protest.
In the days following the forum, a welcoming committee of protesters assembled outside the Palais de Justice, the courthouse in Montreal's Old Port. They were there for the arrival of Jean-Louis Lapointe. Lapointe is the Montreal police officer who fired his gun in August 2008, killing Freddy Villanueva.
Last week, Lapointe was being interrogated for the first time since the shooting as part of an inquest that is ongoing. CKUT spoke to Will Prosper, a community advocate for Montreal North, at the protest.
We need to stop police investigating police. That should never happen. We need a different instance or institution that takes care of that, because it shows that nowadays, especially with this case, that the inquest conducted by the SU was never done properly.
As March 15th, the International Day Against Police Brutality approaches, it is important to remember that organizing and participating in events such as Montreal's first ever Forum Against Police Violence and Impunity is essential to fighting police brutality in our communities. The forum was a space where people were able to engage in discussion, share experiences, and develop strategies in the ongoing struggle to live free of police violence.